Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Anderson out to the sea, scores! Bingo! Broken stick, Lightning without one. Another broken stick, now the Red Wings without one, loose in the slot, they jam one, they score! Persistent pays off, it's 2-0.
James to Love for three. James drives past Morris and finishes. Morris jumper again. Long three-pointer, Reggie Jackson. Irving finds James. James finds a path to the rim. Three-on-one for the Pistons. Caldwell Pope, an extra pass. Looked like he got a layup. Instead, he winds up taking a two-pointer and knocks it down. Caldwell Pope much improved on the offensive end as he shows Irving fires and hits a three. Irving gets past Drummond. Does he hold on to his pivot foot? I guess so, as James back.
There's the cut, there's the layup, off the glass, at the buzzer. Good call, coach. Irving way outside, hits a three. Stanley Johnson connects Blake on Irving, shot's good, and a foul. Blake kicks it back out. Stanley Johnson drills another. He's been attacking a lot more. Spins, gets inside, can't finish, but the tip in is good. Irving for three. Morris again. James double out to Love. Three-pointer. Got it. Caldwell Pope connects again. Irving the crossover. The step back. The jumper. Comes all the way back out to Love. Love drives and finishes. Jackson floats it up and Drummond throws it down. Kevin Love for three. Jackson gets free. Reverse. It's good. James on the drive. Back to Love. Bang! Terrific game, but down the stretch, it was all Cleveland, and the Cavaliers take game one.
Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs. You kidding me? Playoffs?
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
That's the cut I was looking for an hour ago. Playoffs?
You made me go look for it, so ask and you shall receive.
Well done, sir. Thank you very much. Yeah, we're talking about playoffs. You heard a little playoff hockey there. Couple of cuts from the Red Wings win, a much-needed win, Jim Kuchlin tells us. Hockey is just not my bag. I never pretended that it is. I won't fake trying to talk about it like I'm knowledgeable. I will fake being knowledgeable about other things. Some of them might actually be knowledgeable about. So Kuchlin will update us on hockey. And then, of course, you heard plenty of highlights from the Cavaliers' Game 1 win over the Pistons. Is that a portent of things to come? Because the Pistons were there. You know, Jim, we just talked to Dennis Manilow from Cleveland to get the Cavaliers side of things. We're going to talk to a couple of our Detroit writers in a moment to get things from the Pistons perspective. But from being in the middle here in Toledo, kind of halfway in between, sort of, in all seriousness, the Pistons played about as well as I think they probably can play, maybe with the exception of Reggie Jackson down the stretch getting up, you know, with the big mistake with that technical, you can't get there. Maybe Stan Van not playing Stanley Johnson enough. But they played about as well as they could to be up. What were they up with, about 9-10 minutes to go?
About seven. They were up seven.
Plus seven, and then to only be down four with a couple of minutes to go, they were right there.
They were?
In fact, they were down two with a couple of minutes to go. They were right there. But then, you know, the Cavaliers, I don't know if it's experience, playoff experience, because the Pistons haven't been there very much. Obviously, first time since, as we pointed out before, 09.
Reggie Jackson is really the only starter, main rotation player with, well, Blake, too, because he's older, right, that actually have playoff experience. Drummond has none. KCP has none.
And
Tobias Harris has
Reggie's
none.
Reggie's experience was as not a main part of the rotation player.
Right.
Obviously. So it's first, you know, first for him where he's being relied upon. So it's about as well as they can play, I think, against the Cavaliers and still end up losing. And for the Cavaliers, flip side, I think the big three played about as well as they can play. 81 points combined, 11 assists for LeBron, 6 for Kyrie, 13 boards for Kevin Love. And yet they really struggled to put the Pistons away at the end. So what does that mean going forward?
It means that it's going to be as tough as a series as we kind of thought. Even if it ends up Cavs in five, for example, it's still going to be, you know, tough games. the big three thing is why if either side can really look at a few positive things, you know, from this game. Pistons shot well. Their bench was outstanding for three quarters, and that's been an Achilles heel as well, the Pistons. And then you mentioned it, the minimal takeaway, other than the fact that they actually got the W for the Cavs, is, yeah, that's why you put a big three together, as those three did their jobs, period, end of story.
All right, I want to set up our next two guests by quoting just a very, very brief part from each column. Sean Corp, who covers the Pistons for DetroitBadBoys.com, a part of SB Nation, wrote in his very first paragraph, "Nothing scared me more coming into the matchup with Cleveland than," than Kevin Love playing center. Cleveland didn't feature Love at the five spot. Hold on a second here. This is not the right article. My apologies. I had the wrong Sean Corp article up. Here's the first one. This is the one. Sorry. "The Detroit Pistons gave the Cavaliers everything they could handle. Although Detroit lost 106-101, the Pistons showed that they belong in the playoffs, and Stan Van Gundy showed the world that he is still one of the best coaches in the NBA. High praise. In a five-point loss, he kept them there. He got them there. He's the man." Now the first line from Aaron McMahon's column for MLive.com. "Stan Van Gundy outcoached? That's what Maria Rittenauer," I think it's Marla Rittenauer, isn't it, "of the Akron Beacon Journal wrote Sunday night after the Detroit Pistons lost game one of their Eastern Conference first-round series to the Cavaliers, 106-101. So I asked Aaron McMahon via Twitter, do you agree with that line, Stan Van Gundy outcoached? He said, yeah, I do. So I said, okay. Sean Corp says this was evidence of Stan being one of the best in the league. You're saying he just got outcoached by Ty Lue. One of you guys is wrong. Let's put them on together and figure out which is which." So Sean from Detroit Bad Boys and Aaron from M Live, thanks both of you guys for joining us. How are you guys doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
All right. Sean, let's start with you. You know, the Pistons just lost by five, obviously. Stan kind of expressed some regret after the game with some of the decisions he made, particularly not keeping Stanley Johnson on the floor more, maybe not going small to match the Cavaliers, trying to stay with his status quo rotation. I don't know exactly what all of his regrets are. He didn't want to say them because he said that gets into game planning for game two, which is completely respectable and understandable. So he kind of admits some mistakes. And you say this was evidence that he's still one of the best coaches in the NBA. What do you mean?
Well, looking at this series, you're looking at a number one seed against a number eight seed. To have the Pistons, who are 10-point dogs going into this game one, be up seven in the fourth quarter, you know, they didn't pull it out. I think that had less to do with being coached or out-coached by the opponent than the fact that Cleveland has, you know, the three best players on the floor, and they have the playoff experience to know that with 6 minutes in the game left, 8 minutes in the game left, they have another level that they can ratchet it up to. And frankly, Van Gundy had the Pistons playing at peak efficiency or peak capacity basically for all four quarters and until they wilted toward the end. So I don't necessarily think it was an indication of being outcoached, just that they were up against a very tough challenge and they couldn't quite get over the hump there at the end.
All right, good stuff. So Aaron McMahon, MLive.com, you wrote that, well, you quoted another writer about Stan being a coach. That's why you didn't exactly back it up or disagree with it. That's why I had to ask you personally on Twitter. Do you agree? And you said you do agree that he was outcoached in this game by Ty Lue, coaching his very first playoff game. Stan, a longtime veteran of the playoffs, Ty Lue in his first game outcoaches him. Why do you think so?
Well, I mean, it came down to that fourth quarter when Ty kind of inserted Kevin Love there in the lineup. You know, the Cavs decided to go small, and that gave the Pistons problems. You know, in fact, Stan was asked before the game, you know, if he'd be willing or would prefer going small against the Cavs, and he said absolutely not, because that gives the Pistons fits. That's not something they're designed to do, nor do they want to do. You know, Andre Drummond's obviously a fixture of this lineup defensively and with the pick and roll. And you saw what happened last night. You know, Kevin Love forced Aaron Baines, and then he forced Andre Drummond out onto the perimeter. And that created problems. It opened things up offensively for the Cavs, and they really capitalized because of it.
By the way, just for the point of tiebreaker, I guess, between you two guys, David Mayo, who, Sean, I'm sure you realize, is Aaron's colleague at MLive.com. David Mayo's column today, five changes Piston Stan Van Gundy must consider after being outcoached in game one. And he listed several things there. How much do you think Stan can do, Aaron, going back to you, because of what Sean said? I mean, at the end of the day, even if he is a better coach than Ty Lue, and I think everybody would agree he is, and that's not a knock on Lou. It's a knock on Lou's experience, perhaps, because he's just started. But even if he's a better coach, you know, the Cavs have the three best players on the floor pretty much at any given time.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And obviously this Pistons team is equipped and designed a certain way. You know, they're not, I don't say necessarily equipped to handle three star, you know, players of this caliber. But no, they're going to have to make some adjustments. And one of them's going to have to be finding a way to contain Kevin Love should Ty Lue decide to put him, you know, in the center spot again. You know, if that means bringing Andre Drummond on the game and, you know, maybe putting Tobias Harris or Marcus Morris, on Love, I guess they'll have to do it. In fact, Van Gundy was asked about it today at practice. He didn't rule it out. But again, that's not something they want to do. That's not something that the Pistons prepared for it, but that's not something they want to get into, because if that ends up happening, it kind of shifts everything. I would say that would give Cleveland, they already have the advantage as it is. That would probably result in this series turning into not only a four-game sweep, but Cleveland could run away with some of these games.
You know, and thinking about this too, guys, this coaching thing, and right now I'm siding slightly with Aaron's argument that, yes, he got out-coached a little bit yesterday, did Stan Van Gundy, and that's on the basis of when they went small. Put Love at the five. For any of us who watched that broadcast yesterday, you heard the ABC guys correctly point out that, you know, anytime you do something like that, if you're the Cavs, it's going to force somebody like Drummond out to the outside. And that's not where the Pistons want Andre Drummond. They want him clogging up that lane and grabbing all the rebounds. It almost makes me wonder, and you were mentioning some of the possibilities, Aaron. I want to get both of your guys, Sean and Aaron, your thoughts on this. Is this a scenario where if they do this again, the Cavs, for a more extended period of time, do you maybe have to take Drummond out and put somebody like an Aaron Baines in, or even go smaller around it to try to compensate?
Well, I think go ahead.
No, ahead, Sean.
I think definitely they're going to look to do it more. In fact, you know, this is not the most important argument to solve, being outcoached or not. But I would say one knock you could put on Cleveland is, why did they wait so long? I mean, as was read, one of the columns that I wrote on the site was that there was nothing that scared me more than Kevin Love at center. I think that's not an especially cogent piece of analysis. I think that's pretty much what everybody anticipated going into this series, that Drummond would have fits with Kevin Love at center. And, you know, it took till crunch time at the end of the fourth quarter, pretty much till the Cavs really committed to it. That being said, for the Pistons to deal with it, they're going to have to make a choice between either trying to get Love in the pick and roll with Drummond if they want to keep Drummond on the floor, or post him up and try and draw some contact fouls on Kevin Love to get him out of the game, or they just have to say it's time to take Drummond out of the game. And I don't think they would necessarily look to Baines to be the person that can try and contain Love. I think they either go to one of their typical power forwards, which are really small forwards in Marcus Morris or Tobias Harris, or they look to kind of dust off Anthony Tolliver and see if he can handle Kevin Love defensively while also providing some of that spaced offense that Tolliver gives you when he's, you know, knocking down his open looks.
That was Sean Corp, by the way, of DetroitBadBoys.com, a part of SB Nation. Aaron McMahon is with us from my M Live, and prior to that, you just heard Jim Cushlin. Aaron, do you have any thoughts on that part before we move on?
No, I mean, I tend to agree with all that. You know, it's funny you keep bringing up Tobias Harris, and this is another, I guess, reason as to why I thought Stan Van Gundy, I guess you'd say, was outcoached. He mentioned it after the game last night, but I think the way he mishandled Tobias Harris yesterday was interesting. You know, Harris struggled. He ended up, I think, 4 of 11, 9 points, and nearly 40 minutes on the court. And he had an option, and it could have went longer with Stanley Johnson off the bench, who I thought looked really good and probably had his best game he's had in several weeks now. Stanley handled LeBron James well defensively. I mean, I think he held him to, I think it was either 1 or 2 points in the eight minutes or so he faced him there in the third and fourth quarter. So I think that was another blip on, I guess, Van Gundy's radar, and I think he realized it after the game.
That's a really interesting point you make because, again, going to your colleague, Aaron, Aaron McMahon of MLive.com, David Mayer wrote this as far as the adjustments that Stan Van Gundy should make, and one is more Stanley on LeBron. He pointed out he engaged James like an interior lineman. They bashed and banged, and Johnson guarded him without fear. He delivered in all phases with 9 points and 8 rebounds, but his physicality on James, not measurable in the box score, was the standout element. So I'm going to ask you guys both this, and Jim Kushlin as well, how do you deal with LeBron James from a physicality standpoint if you're probably not going to get the majority of the calls when things do get physical? And obviously I'll point back to what Stan Van Gundy said during a sideline interview.
A couple calls have upset our guys. You know, they've got to understand LeBron's LeBron. They're not going to call offensive fouls on him. He gets to do what he wants. They got to understand that.
And then after the game, though, kind of walking that back and saying this wasn't an official's loss. This was decided by the players, not by LeBron James. Or I'm sorry, not by calls favoring LeBron James or anything else.
Look, I thought it evened out really well. I thought they started, but early on, I thought there were two pretty obvious offensive fouls down there on him. But, you know, that's two calls in an entire game. After that, look, the refereeing had nothing to do with tonight. They did a good job. It went both ways. I thought they did a really good job. It was decided by the players on the floor, as it should be.
So it was decided by the players, but Stan's earlier point about LeBron he's not going to get called for charging very often is Stan's point of view. So how do the Pistons counter LeBron James from a physicality standpoint? Do you think they stay with Stanley Johnson? Let's go back to Sean for this one. Should they stay with Stanley Johnson to get more minutes against LeBron James?
Well, I think that's definitely a place Stan Van Gundy can turn, but the big three of Cleveland are going to get their points. They're going to have an impact, but honestly, if you look at the matchups, I think the Pistons have many more answers for LeBron James as opposed to Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love. They can throw, you know, Stanley Johnson at LeBron. They can put Marcus Morris on LeBron or Tobias Harris at LeBron or even KCP on LeBron in certain instances. So, you know, they can make him work for his offense. And Stanley Johnson definitely showed why he belongs in the rotation defensively. So that's certainly a place they can turn, but honestly, I don't think the series is really about solving the LeBron James issue. I think it's much more solving that Kyrie and Kevin Love issue.
I think that might be a little easy to say after game one because LeBron had 22 and 11. It was Kyrie with 31 and 6 and Love with 28 and 13. But go to Aaron here. You know, if LeBron busts out for one of his 40-point playoff games, it's going to be probably a different tune there. Then we got to really figure out, if you're the Pistons, how to deal with them. What do you think?
Yeah, and that's what makes LeBron so dangerous. You know, he obviously can score off the dribble and everything else. We know that. But sometimes he's more dangerous, you know, without the ball. You know, he makes crisp passes. He gets his teammates involved. I think the answer really is kind of evening out the minutes between Marcus and Stanley Johnson on LeBron. You know, we talked to Stanley Johnson the day after practice, and one of the reporters asked him about his wake up moment, I guess, in the playoffs, and it was when he got knocked to the floor by LeBron yesterday and realized the foul was called on him. He's obviously willing, and maybe 6'7" bulldozer, he's willing to take it. You know, if I was Stan, I'd put more of him on LeBron. You know, not only can he handle him physically, but I think maybe for Stanley it's more of a proving moment for him, you know, to prove that he belongs in the NBA, he belongs in this position. So I don't want to call it a little bit of rookie hazing, but if you can put him on and he can be effective, you know, for several extended minutes, why not do it?
You know, it's a really interesting point about LeBron, and Sean, you just said being more worried about Kyrie and Kevin Love, particularly after the way they played in Game 1. What was supposed to be an advantage for the Pistons and is supposed to be an advantage for everybody who plays the Cavaliers in the playoffs is taking advantage of Kyrie and Love on defense, because neither one of them have defended worth a crap pretty much all year long, but especially Kyrie. And Reggie Jackson has had his way with him in a couple of the matchups. So that's another way you kind of stop them offensively, if you can use the word stop, is to put a lot more pressure on them defensively, to the point where maybe Tyronn Lue says, yeah, I need a little bit more of Matthew Dellavedova because I need some stops here, and you get Kyrie out of the game.
Yeah, and I think definitely the Pistons had some trouble negotiating Cleveland's absolute sellout on every pick and roll, and that falls on Reggie Jackson. He has to figure out how to deal with that when they overload one side of the floor on the pick and roll. He has to be able to find open shooters. That being said, I know, Jackson got some grief for dribbling the air out of the ball toward the end of the game, and hopefully he learns from that. But if you look collectively, Jackson had a pretty decent game. He was able to find his shooters. He was able to cut and distribute, and Steve Blake, on offense at least, was able to do the same thing. That goes a long way toward the bench having such a productive outing And a little credit goes to, of course, Andre Drummond, too, only because they were so concentrated on stopping Drummond that they opened up the floor for everyone else, and the Pistons took advantage.
Sean Corb, DetroitBadBoys.com, part of SB Nation, Aaron McMahon, MLive.com, Jim Cushlin here as well. Bob France with you on the extravaganza. Any reason to think that anything changes? And I don't mean, you know, we all just talked about possible strategy, game planning changes, but in terms of results in game number two, or are we kind of all agreed that if the Pistons are to get a win and make this a series, it's probably going to happen in the Palace? Go back to Aaron for this.
I totally agree with you, Bob. You know, I anticipate game two being a little more lopsided than game one was. I mean, I guess near the end with the final score. You know, I expect this being 2-0 come back to Detroit. And if the Pistons don't pull off game three, this will definitely be a four-game sweep. But I still stand by my, I think I had Cavs in five. I anticipate the Pistons being competitive in both games here in Detroit. And maybe a potential game five in Cleveland, but I anticipate Cleveland winning this 4-1.
Sean, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's very hard to argue against Cleveland really handling the series pretty easily. The only thing you could look at from a game one perspective, apart from any individual struggles, is that the Cavaliers grabbed 12 offensive rebounds. The Pistons allowed the fewest offensive rebounds in the regular season to their opponents. And some of that was because they weren't as committed to boxing out defenders. Some of it was just some tough luck on some really long rebound opportunities because the Cavs shoot so many threes. So maybe that, you know, gets back into Detroit's favor, and limiting Cleveland's second chance opportunities would have gone a long way in changing the outcome of that game in game one. So, you know, their rebounding prowess could be something that swings a game. But that being said, you know, this is not going to be a 7-game series. It'd be lucky to be a 6-game series. This is really about Detroit learning what playoff basketball is, and, you know, those last 6 minutes of the fourth quarter in game one, that was a learning experience for Reggie Jackson, Andre Drummond. Seeing Stanley Johnson step up to the challenge, that's also, you know, something that they're all going to learn from.
You know, and I look at this series, guys, and what's interesting is, you know, we're for obvious reasons today, we were talking about the coaching and the strategies as we've been talking here for the last few minutes. But in terms of why, I kind of think that this may have been one of their better shots, certainly in a game at the Q, because I still think they'll actually take one in the Palace, and that's because for what it's worth, the Cavs have played the Pistons have played the Cavs very solidly all season long. We're all going to throw out last Wednesday's game. But the biggest thing that I look at, and why I'm kind of agreeing with you, Aaron, that I think Wednesday's game two will be a little more lopsided, is the shooting numbers. Let's all face facts, guys. The Pistons were not a great shooting team overall, nor from distance during the regular season, and we all know the troubles they've had with the bench. All three things of those things showed up, and then some. Yesterday, bench was outstanding. They shot 50% overall from the field, 15 of 29, that's 51% from beyond the arc. I got to think all three of those things are going to regress to the mean, and if that's the case, you're not looking at a 5-point game. You're looking at a 10 to 12-point game.
No, you're absolutely right. Now, and I was saying that to colleagues last night. I don't anticipate the Pistons having another 62% shooting half. I don't anticipate them making 15 threes again this series. Also, you got to keep in mind, you know, they had 3 days off. Both teams really had 3 days off in between, you know, their final game of the regular season and game one. That definitely, I think, favor the Pistons, who, you know, prefer to shoot the ball and shoot threes. But yeah, I don't anticipate them having another strong shooting night like they did last night.
Yeah, and can you guys honestly say, though, that you also can expect the big three to play as well as they did together? They have not pretty much yet all year, and I don't have any individual games in mind. But, I mean, just I think we've all agreed that this has been a real transition year because everybody's healthy, and they're supposed to get together and find chemistry, and it wasn't there. LeBron expressing some dissatisfaction in certain days with LeBron or with Kyrie and other days with Kevin Love. They played about as well as they could. Can we expect that every night in this series, or is, you know, last night or yesterday afternoon, I guess I should say, is that more of the outlier? And that the Pistons have some hope here that those three guys aren't going to be on the same page like they were yesterday.
I think there's a good chance that Cleveland's big three have similar success to what they saw in game one, only because they have real matchup advantages against the Pistons. We've talked about the Kevin Love advantage. And for Kyrie, he's either going to face off against Reggie Jackson, who's a very poor defender, or he's going to be have KCP on him. But The Pistons have had trouble guarding the pick and roll with the point guard all year. If they're prone to switch on that, so that puts a lesser defender on Kyrie, and he'll take advantage of that. So, and of course, you know, LeBron's LeBron. He's going to get his. So I don't think you're going to see a big drop-off. I don't think you're going to see any particular one of the three struggle unless it's just an off game. But throughout this series, I think you can expect them to be pretty successful.
Sean Corp, DetroitBadBoys.com, Aaron McMahon of MLive.com, Jim Cushlin, Bob France. Last thought, guys. You guys have covered the league, so you know more than just Detroit basketball. You know more than just Cleveland basketball. You've seen championship basketball. When you look at the first round, game ones, and you know, it's game one. It is what it is. Okay, I'm not trying to read too much into this, but you look at the Warriors who are favored. You look at the Spurs and the Thunder who are probably the next two out west. You look at what the Clippers did. You look at the Cavaliers. You look at the Heat. From what you saw up close with the Cavaliers and Pistons, do they look like a championship contender, or is this all about whoever wins the West wins the title? Who wants to go first there? I don't really care. Aaron, since Sean just spoke, go ahead first, Aaron.
Yeah, no, that's fine. You know, I think Cleveland, of the teams out of the East, I think Cleveland's probably the most equipped, in terms of size and ability and talent, to win the NBA title. You know, whether they do or not, you know, I don't see that happening. I mean, I think whoever comes out of the West, be it Golden State more than likely, or maybe even San Antonio, I think they're your eventual champion. Pistons, I mean, I don't see them going anywhere. I think Cleveland's the best of the East. I think they're a good team when their big three are all contributing, like they did last night. I see no reason why they don't get to the finals.
No, I know. I think we all pretty much agree they're going to get to the finals. I just want to know if you saw what you see right now from this team can win the championship. In a hypothetical matchup against either the Warriors or the Spurs or the Thunder or the Clippers, they are the top four seeds, obviously, out west, and one of them is going to go to the finals, probably the Warriors. But based upon that, do you think they can win a championship, or is this just an Eastern Conference championship team that is going to lose in the finals?
No, I think they could, but again, they're going to need, you know, the type of production that they got out of Kyrie and Kevin Love and LeBron like they did last night. But also, I think they'll need more production off their bench. The bench was kind of, you know, I guess negated by Detroit's bench last night, which was an interesting case because Detroit's bench has been so up and down all season. But no, in terms of the little things, I thought the Cavs looked good in terms of rebounding, and they only had five turnovers. So mistakes-wise, they're pretty good. And I think if you're going to win the NBA title, you need to be mistake-free, first of all. And then when you're going up against, say, a Golden State or San Antonio, if your big guys can be successful and score and rebound like the big three did yesterday, it would give them a shot, that's for sure.
Sean Corp, what do you think? Do you see a championship team there that beat the Pistons yesterday?
I'm going to say no, because, well, the bottom of the East is stronger than the bottom of the West. You shouldn't be giving up 101 points to your opponent. I mean, you look at the way those West teams just throttled the competition. And secondly, well, we've talked about how the Pistons uniquely cannot really match up with Cleveland's big three. Just think about what Golden State or San Antonio is going to be able to do against Kevin Love offensively, kind of put him through the ringer on defense. And that means he could really be taken out of a series. He could even be removed from the floor, and then your big three becomes big two, and you have some problems on your hands. So I don't see any reason to think that the champion's not coming out of the West this year.
Kush, what do you think?
I'm still kind of with that at this point. I mean, you know, though I still don't think they're out of contention and championship caliber in the context that you're saying, I still think they are, only because they should still be the East rep, and that means they're at least in the NBA Finals. If that's not competing for a title, I don't know what is. But right now, yeah, they're still at a clear disadvantage for reasons we've all outlined for quite a while now against either the Warriors or the Spurs.
Any reason to think, and I know we're just looking ahead here, and you guys are the Detroit side, we want to talk about the Pistons. Well, you know what, let's do that. Forget that question. I was about to say, any reason to think if they do come up short and don't win it, that there are roster overhauls or, you know, major changes to that roster next year to please LeBron James, who's obviously got to sign a new long-term contract when the salary cap expands. But let's stay with the Detroit side, since you guys cover the Pistons, obviously. Any changes in the offing this offseason if this is a first-round series and done? 8 seed losing to 1 is expected, no big deal. Is it just build from here, or do you see a lot of people leaving and new faces coming?
Well, I would
say... I keep forgetting we have two guests here, and I'm waiting for you to talk, and you're both going, who's going to go? Sean Corp, go ahead.
I would say that Van Gundy knows that he's only built pretty much half or three-quarters of a roster, and he doesn't really have a traditional power forward that he can count on with Tolliver not even getting in the game in game one. So I think, you know, whether they win, lose, are competitive or not, the holes are pretty obvious. They're probably going to want to add defensive-minded while also, you know, offensively gifted power forward to come off the bench or start. And then they're going to need to shore up their backup point guard situation. Steve Blake's just – he can't defend at a level that is going to get them very far, especially with Reggie Jackson not having much in the way of a defensive game. So I think those are the two positions they're most likely to address via
free agency. Are we talking
free agency
addressing, or are we talking trades, or are we talking draft?
Well, I think definitely they could trade their first-round pick for some roster depth, for some experience. I think that's certainly in play. They tried to trade their first-round pick in the Donatas Montiunas trade, and that got rescinded. So I don't think they especially covet another young player on their team, but they have money to spend in free agency just like everyone else, and I think there's, you know, some free agents that make sense from the power forward and the backup point guard position.
What do you think, Aaron McMahon?
No, I agree with what Sean said. You know, they've got two glaring holes, I think, at this point, forward and backup point guard position. The key here is I don't think they're going to have a whole lot of cap space to work with. I think to upgrade the forward spot like they want to, it might require some type of trade. I think they can address the backup point guard situation in free agency or even in the draft, and it may come in the draft. But to upgrade the forward spot, it may require a trade. I don't know. I guess it remains to be seen. You know, we've been baffled by Stan Van Gundy's moves before, caught off guard, whatever you want to say. But yeah, those are the two glaring holes, I think, at this point.
Good stuff, gentlemen. Hey, guys, really appreciate your input. The series is obviously just one game in. We'll get at least four. I think we all agree it'll probably go to five at the minimum. I think Detroit gets one at home, probably game three. So there's a lot of opportunities in the next couple of weeks for us to chat again. So we really appreciate you joining us today.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much,
yeah,
guys. Sean Corp, Detroit Bad Boys, part of SB Nation. Aaron McMahon is with MLive.com. Both of them cover the Pistons. Of course, Jim Kirschlin as well. All right, we need a timeout. We're late. Let's get a bottom of the hour, which is now 20 minutes until the top of the hour Sports Center. And we'll come back and try to take your phone calls. You want to talk about this NBA series? We'll do it. We've got a few other stories we can touch on before 5 o'clock, and Drive Time comes your way with Miller right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket.
401065. Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
All right, we roll right along on the Extravaganza. It's 4:47. We got about 13 minutes until Drive Time with Miller right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Thanks for tuning in. Don't forget to listen to us when you're not listening to us. All I mean by that is check out our podcast. We are now podcasting every show, every one of the Extravaganza programs, online at 1065theticket.com. So if you are busy in the afternoon, maybe your workday doesn't end until 4 and you missed the 3 o'clock hour and you're interested in an interview we did or conversation that we had or whatever the case might be, or if you just want to listen to it again because you were just so enthralled with what we had to say, or maybe you just want to pick on us too, either way. All you got to do is go to 1065theticket.com. You can listen to the podcast of our local shows, including the Extravaganza and Drive Time with Mike Miller. So get online and do that. Now, want to do something very special here. We told you for the better part of the last several weeks that we have been having a contest to get somebody to Orlando, Florida with the Orlando Flyaway Contest. It's been a great contest. Brought to you by the beautiful Orlando World Center Marriott, where the winner is going to stay. And brought to you locally by Allegiant Air, Shea's Carpet, Car Ride of Monroe, Toledo Express Airport, Generators Plus, and, of course, 106.5, The Ticket, right here. And we told you we're going to announce the winner's name today, and that's exactly what we do now as we say congratulations to Marley Warcole of Toledo. Marley Warcole, you are the winner.
Can you dig it?
Marley.
Yeah.
Marley has already been informed that she is the winner, so congratulations. That is outstanding. She qualified on our sister station, The Zone, so, you know, we're all big one happy family here. We had a great big contest going across all of our stations, and we're very, very happy to announce that winner. So congratulations to Marley. Now, speaking of nice things, fun things, before we're done, are you a comedy fan? Jim, you like going to comedy shops? You know, what am I trying to say?
Comedy clubs?
Comedy clubs, thank you. I don't know why I'm sitting here struggling.
I suppose it depends on who it is. Although I haven't been to one in a long time, but it depends who it is. One time I got to see Louis Black back when I was in Tech. That was hilarious.
I've seen him twice. I've seen Anthony Jeselnik. I'd love to see Daniel Tosh in person, too. I like that. I like the really extreme ones, too. It's weird. You know, the talking about the really highly offensive ones, because it's the only time you can really, you know, you can joke about things that otherwise make you just really, really upset.
And, that's true.
They can get away with it because they're on the anyway. One of the best guys working today, no question about it, is Jim Gaffigan, and he's coming to the Toledo Zoo on July 22nd before we're done. So in about 8 minutes or so, I'm going to give you the number to call, and you could win Jim Gaffigan tickets. I got a pair of tickets for you to that show on July 22nd at the zoo. I think that'll be an awful lot of fun for you if you get the opportunity to go. All right, so really good conversation today with three guests, including Dennis Maniloff. Thanks to Aaron McMahon. Thanks to Sean Corp as well on the Pistons and the Cavaliers game one. Jim, going back to what we were talking about, and by the way, I've got, I don't know, 7 minutes maybe. If you want to get in now, 866. We haven't had a lot of time for calls. Apologies because we have the guests on the air. 866-240-1065 if you do want to get in on this. Jim, the question I'd asked those guys and that I'm asking everybody else, and it's kind of floating, and it wasn't even mine. Somebody asked me on social media, Bob, based on what you saw in game one, this is a Facebook question, do you think the Cavaliers are on the way to a possible championship? He said, I do. He was real encouraged by the big three scoring 81 points together, getting on the same page. And, Jim, did you notice they made a point of sitting, you know, the three of them down together at the post-game press conference, and the three of them, LeBron in the middle, flanked by Kyrie and Kevin Love, just like it's kind of supposed to be. And I think they're trying, the Cavaliers, to portray these guys as all being on the same page, all of them kind of enjoying the chemistry that it's going to take for them to win a championship. They can't be winning championships if Kyrie is at odds with LeBron about who's dribbling the basketball. They can't be winning a championship if LeBron is not happy with where Kevin Love is calling for the basketball, if he's not getting into the spaces he needs to get for this team to win and hitting shots. They all did those things yesterday. Mm-hmm. That's one game, and they got to win 16 to win a championship. And so they tried to say, look at them, they were all on the same page on the floor. They were all on the same page after the game. They all said the same things. They appeared together. They sit together. This is all hunky-dory cohesiveness. That's the image that they want to portray, because that's the only way they can win a championship. I don't know if I buy it that they're all on the same page. This was one day. It could very easily come undone in another day. And secondly, again, just looking at, you know, the statement made by most of the top contenders for championships in game one of their series, the Cavs were the only team that really didn't make a statement. You know, 30-plus point win for the Warriors, 30-plus point win for the Spurs, 30-plus point win for the Thunder, 20-some point win for the Clippers, and a 25, 30-some point win for the Heat. You know, and the Cavaliers win by five. Does that mean anything, margin of victory? No, except for that old famous, you know, statement kind of a game that was, you know, statements were made by the other contenders that just won by the Cavs yesterday. So do you see them as a championship-caliber team or just a team that's the best in the East and probably will end it there?
I think it's still, honestly, Bob, my opinion really, for the most part, hasn't changed based on what I saw yesterday. I mean, again, I've been thinking that the Pistons, of all teams, will actually be still the toughest Cav opponent in the first two rounds anyway. Just because, heck, even if they blew the doors off the Pistons by 25, would we be sitting here saying, oh, they're totally ready to take on the Warriors? I doubt that. I don't think we would have had that. I don't think it really changes much, and it certainly doesn't change the, in theory, trajectory, which is still going to feature this team in the NBA Finals, even if some of these series are tougher than, say, last year when they swept two out of the three in the eastern portion of the playoffs. So I don't think it really changes, you know, at least my opinion. They're still going to end up in the NBA Finals. I still see nobody in the East that's going to beat them 4 out of 7. Can they win more than one against Golden State? I don't think yesterday really should alter anybody's opinion either side of that one.
Yeah, I suppose. The only thing that really altered my opinion is not their performance. It's the other performances, the ones I outlined. You know, I saw statements made by the other top contenders and not so much of one made by the Cavs. Yeah, and that's not fair, really. I mean, what if the other ones all had close games? Would it change my opinion that I think the Warriors are the favorite? No. But I'm just saying that I'm just saying. You know, a lot of teams looked really, really good in the first playoff. The Cavaliers looked all right. They had a big game from the big three and still managed to come within a whisper of losing a game.
Right.
And that, to me, is the only problem with that. So who looked the best to you this weekend?
To me,
Saturday, Sunday, game one in all eight series. Who looked the best?
Honestly, to me, you know, it's the Spurs that actually looked the best. I mean, I know Memphis is a little decimated, but they went out there.
Not a little.
A lot, especially the no Marc Gasol part. That's why they're
and
totally
Conley,
dead
too.
Meat.
Yeah, that's right.
I forget Carter, about Conley. Yeah. But the Spurs did Spur-like things, you know, in this one. Oklahoma City was outstanding against Dallas. And the reason I'm not saying Golden State, and I've been thinking about this one all day, and honestly, I don't care what happens in game two. If I'm Steve Kerr, Steph Curry is not playing. Not playing tonight. You know why? You can't be messing around with that kind of stuff. Little bit of a sprained ankle, he'll probably be fine. He'll probably be able to play and probably will. But honestly, if I'm Steve Kerr, I don't play Steph Curry tonight. And that's, to me, the biggest takeaway from Golden State's game is, Steph tweaked an ankle. That's the kind of thing you can't have if you're the Warriors. So that's one of my other biggest takeaways from the weekend, is I hope they don't play Steph Curry. You want that thing 100%, but you don't even want to mess with that. You just don't.
I don't think he will. I don't think he'll play. I think he's going to be down for the night, and I don't think they're worried about it. I really, really
And they
don't.
Shouldn't be. Not in this round against this specific opponent. I know they faced off last year, and they still have Harden, but we all know this Houston team, even though they're all the same personnel, strangely enough, they're a shell of what they were before. Yeah, I don't even risk it. I don't even risk
no,
it.
Don't
That's one of my
will.
Biggest.
My answer to my own question, by the way, before we're done here, is I don't think the Spurs were the most impressive, as great as they look, because of what you just said about Memphis. I think Memphis is probably should be the eighth seed for the.
They almost fell that far.
Yeah, I mean, you know what I mean. Given their injury situation, I think. In other words, I think the Rockets, who are kind of a mess anyway, because of the whole Harden and Howard and the getting along there. I think the Rockets are a mess, but I think they're probably a little bit of a tougher matchup than Memphis is right now.
Fair enough. So, the other thing, by the way, on the injury front real quick to keep in mind is that in that Boston-Atlanta game, because remember, and this is key to the Cavs, or the Pistons for that matter, because it's all bracketed like your tournament brackets were a month ago, they lost Avery Bradley, which sure as heck looks like a pulled hammy. And if that's the case, you know, he's done for the playoffs, and as I've said, Bob, I'm not impressed with either of those two teams. The Cavs fared better against Boston and Atlanta than they did against Detroit. Just something to keep in mind for the next Cavs opponent, and again, technically, if it were ever come that
Pistons, you see
they're
the
also
end
now
of that
out
game?
Of starter. Yeah, I did. I watched
did
that whole
you,
game.
Did you see Marcus Smart and that unbelievable, there's 0.4 on the clock. 0.4 on the clock.
Uh-huh.
And Boston has to inbound. And they get the ball into it basically was a jump ball, essentially,
right.
Contested by Smart, and I don't even know who else. Smart went up and grabbed the ball with his right hand, just one-handed, and somehow curled it into a cuffed position, like cuffing the ball.
It would have counted. And I can't believe
no,
that.
No, wouldn't have. No, wouldn't
oh,
have.
Oh, that's right. It wouldn't have. He
no.
did get off
and
weight.
And he flung it from about three-quarters court and hit the backboard beside the rim.
That's about all you can do with four-tenths on the clock.
One of the most unbelievably athletic, talented, crazy things I've ever seen. And initially, Jim, it did look like it would have counted, and even the announcer said, but then when they showed it from another angle, from behind.
Yeah,
Smart,
from the behind angle, it was clearly right.
You see the backboard light up before it leaves the hand. But still unbelievable. Anyway, I didn't get to my point. My point was that I think the Thunder looked better because the Mavericks are a tougher out, I think, than either one of those other two teams we just talked about, Memphis or Houston. And I think what they did to them in decimating them, jumping out to like a 30-10 lead at the beginning and blowing them out by 35, I think the Thunder looked the best out of the weekend or over the weekend. All right, that's it. All the time we got. I do want to get you those tickets I promised you. If you want to go see Jim Gaffigan live at the Toledo Zoo July 22nd, if you love stand-up, you're going to love this show. Be the 10th caller right now as we exit to 866-240-1065. Jim Kushlin will get your name and get you those tickets, and we'll see you tomorrow right here on the Extravaganza.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.